Let's now turn to business tax. There are a number of strands to the PBR that are cause for concern for small businesses. Some of the bad news was released in the 2007 budget. For example, that the small companies rate for corporation tax would progressively rise from 19% to 22% by April 2009. So, if there are no further changes to income tax, this will mean that the small companies rate will be 2% above the basic rate for income tax. The landscape for small companies will look very different from April 2008, and a lot of this is, of course, as a result of the fallout from the Arctic Systems case. The background to this case is well known. A husband, Mr. Jeff Jones, set up a service company to offer his services as an IT consultant, and his wife, Mrs. Jones, worked for about a day a week in the company. They both took personal allowance salaries, and the rest of the profits were paid out as dividends. Both Mr. and Mrs. Jones were 50% shareholders. HMRC challenged the position, and after a long four-year tussle, the House of Lords agreed that this arrangement did fall within the settlements legislation, but the so-called spousal exemption applied, and therefore the Joneses' arrangement was safe for taxation. As you would expect, the government was not prepared to let this lie. These arrangements, now referred to as income shifting, immediately came under attack, with the Treasury vowing to impose new legislation to counteract such schemes. The pre-budget report provided the platform for this. The Chancellor announced that there would be consultation on draft legislation to operate from April 2008, and this is now on the Treasury website. So it's pretty clear that the government wasn't prepared to consult on the principles. It already had legislation in mind and is clearly determined to impose that on the fraternity of taxpayers. Let's take a look at some of those proposals. The intended outcome of the proposed legislation is to undo the tax advantage that is gained by income shifting arrangements. The legislation doesn't consider any situations where these arrangements have been made on a commercial or arm's length basis, so it's clearly going to affect members of families, civil partners, and the like. Let's have a look at some of the conditions, all of which must be met for the legislation to apply. And I summarise here. There are four conditions referred to as conditions A, B, C, and D. Condition A, individual 1 is a party to or has power over the relevant arrangements, and clearly that would have been Mr. Jones in Arctic Systems. Condition B is that individual 1 forgoes income, and the foregone income is individual 2's for the relevant tax year, and that's got to be Mrs. Jones. Condition C, individual 1 has the power to control the amount that is shifted, and finally, condition D, the shifted income consists of distributions of a company or profits of a partnership. Now, the tax paid by individual 1 and individual 2, so this in the Arctic Systems case was Mr. and Mrs. Jones, must be less than it would have been had they not shifted income. In other words, a tax advantage must be obtained. And if all of these conditions are met, the shifted income would be treated for income tax purposes as the income of individual 1, Mr. Jones, and would not be taxed as income of individual 2, Mrs. Jones. Incidentally, it's intended that the treatment of any Class 4 national insurance contributions would follow the tax treatment where a Class 4 liability arises following the shifting of income. Now, that's pretty widely drafted, isn't it? Because it refers to individuals. It doesn't refer directly to married couples, neither does it refer directly to civil partners. And my conclusion there is that that is very widely drafted indeed. It will also apply to life partners who share businesses. Now, the government recognises that the majority of business owners would be unaffected by the proposed legislation because they won't fulfil all of the conditions set out in the draft legislation. But of course, there will always be concerns that people will fall within the scope of the legislation, and so they've given some guidance. And I'll just briefly summarise that. It's going to be necessary to consider, is one individual in a position to shift income with the power to control or influence any arrangements? In other words, can one individual decide or secure how the profits from a business are distributed? Now, I see some daylight here. Presumably, in any company, it's the board of directors which will determine remuneration, and it may be possible to use that to advantage. In other words, it won't be just one individual who controls, it will be more than one. Presumably, too, if the main earner, and of course in Arctic Systems that was Mr. Jones, took a good salary and therefore could not have foregone income, then the rules equally will not apply. Now, there's some further guidance which I won't go into here because you can access that on the Treasury website. But clearly, the answers to these questions will depend upon the facts of the case. And the draft guidance in Annex B of the consultation document sets out ways in which the government believes that business owners and their advisers, and of course that's us, could establish whether income shifting has taken place, including factors which may be taken into account when considering the contribution of each individual to the business. Now, the government is clearly keen to ensure that the proposed new legislation is clear and that administrative burdens on businesses are minimised, and they're seeking guidance from that and contributions from interested parties, and that I assume and hope will include the AAT by the end of February. So, in conclusion here, this looks to me like another unwieldy and unworkable slab of legislation. It's clear in intention, but I think it's probably unworkable in practice. In fact, it sounds horribly to me like IR 35 Mark II. There's one last aspect of business tax that I'd like to have a look at, and that's expensive cars, cars costing over £12,000. As you will know, cars costing over £12,000 have a special treatment for capital allowances and in the P&L adjustments when they are hired. It's the politics of envy, really, and thank heavens that my Land Rover only cost £175 when new in 1957. So, what has the PBR offered on expensive cars? Well, there's a consultation on the tax relief on business expenditure on these cars. The proposals are that expensive cars will no longer have the restriction to £3,000 on capital allowances that they currently are exposed to. It's going to be a proposal based upon how green the car is. If you have a very green car, then it will be eligible to join the general pool of plant and machinery, and that will join cars that are already there, that is, cars under £12,000. But if the cars, these expensive cars, have a very high carbon footprint, and that of course has got to be the Chelsea tractors, then they are going to be put into their own separate pool with a much lower rate of writing down allowances. There's one very odd thing about the proposals here, and it appears that the existing 100% first-year allowances for cars with CO2 emissions up to 120 grams per kilometre would be retained. In which case, the Daughter at College scheme, which I've put out on one or two of the tax series, will still work. But I'm puzzled by that one because all the evidence so far is that that one would disappear in April 2008. So we'll have to see how that one actually pans out.